This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
For the sake, Beth, keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a Mary, the sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
And yes, this is the Annie Fry Show, but as you can tell by now, this is not Annie Fry. This is Chris Sarp sitting in for Annie today. Annie is a little under the weather, so I have the privilege and a high honor of sitting in for her today. Had the honor of doing that last Friday, you know, to show you just how hard Annie works. Annie is a little under the weather, but she sent me a poll, which I hadn't seen yet, that was showing a third poll showing that President Trump's African-American support is in the 30% range.
Did you say a third poll?
A third poll now.
Oh, I didn't even know there were two.
There were two. Yeah, they came out last week. Now there is a third poll saying that African-American support for Trump is at 30%. Of course, you know, we have to have our favorite 97.1 liberal on to talk about this in the third hour. Keith Antone is going to join us to talk about that. I can't wait to hear the spin that he's gonna put on it. But
well, that's fascinating because I knew the one poll,
yeah,
and it was 34% were at least approving of his job performance.
And that's Rasmussen probably that you saw the first one.
I think it was an Emerson or a Quinnipiac, but it was one that I thought, oh, that's significant, but it was still one. What do you attribute the support? I mean, that's a big jump all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Is it impeachment that's causing that?
I've said this on the Weekend Report, cheap plug, that I think the main reason that Donald Trump is gaining African-American support is because of the border issue. I think that resonates with African-Americans when you see the problems that are in the African-American community. And it seems that the Democratic Party is more favorable towards Dreamers and towards illegal aliens. And I think that resonates with African-Americans. You know, I've told this story many times here on the radio, is during 2016, we had a family reunion in Texas. And two of my aunts, they were in their 60s and 70s, very Democrat, hardcore Democrats. But Trump's border wall message was resonating with them because they live with that firsthand. Mm-hmm. They live in Texas. One of my aunts is a school administrator, and she talked about all the extra money that had to be spent on bilingual teachers, bilingual books and things of that nature. So I think it's resonating. When I first heard the poll, I was like, okay, maybe that's just an outlier. Rasmussen polls have lost a little bit of their credibility since
they were accurate in 2016, though.
They were, but they've lost a little bit of their credibility because they drummed out their founder, Scott Rasmussen.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
either.
He's no longer with the company, so they've lost a little credibility with that. But we definitely want to talk about that later in the third hour. Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, you're bringing up so many points that I'm already like wanting to jump into this full force. So I don't know if that's where you're going, but you is this a cultural thing? I mean, you said it was about spending money on bilingual books and stuff. That's not just a border issue. That's more of a, hey, this is a cultural issue that African Americans would be looking at and saying, I don't like that.
Well, the Democratic Party, especially under Barack Obama, which is really ironic, didn't hesitate to show that they were heavily courting illegal immigrants. You look at DACA, where they wanted to give college educations and allow those folks to stay here No fault of their own, I get that. But they also wanted to do a blanket amnesty, in effect, to give people that are here illegal green cards so they can work. And I think that just resonates. I think if you really want to look at the origins of this, I think it goes back to Katrina, when New Orleans was destroyed, mm-hmm. and a lot of African Americans were sent to Houston and to other cities. And this is documented. I have the reports and that from mainstream media that says this. But a lot of New Orleans, the drywallers, and a lot of the rebuilding of New Orleans was done with illegal immigrants. And so I think that was the first thing that brought up awareness that African Americans may be taking our jobs. You know, before we go any further, I want to introduce, we got in the studio with us, is Katie is not here, but we have Frank Ladd. He's on the what we call the Wheels of Steel covering me. And of course, Ryan Wiggins is here.
Going to be peppering you with questions the whole time.
And my wife, Becky Arps, is with us in the studio, a Republican state committee member, wife of a great guy named Chris Arps. So she's going to be chiming in with her thoughts as well.
I'm blessed to be the wife of such a modest man.
And, of course, we want to get your thoughts. Our phone numbers are 314, and I'm even looking at it, 241-9797 or 866-455-9797. Another guest that we're going to have on today, I'm really excited to talk to her. She is Susie Moore. She's a blogger with redstate.com. She's also local from here in St. Louis, and she's an attorney. And we're going to talk to her a little bit about this controversial gun case that the Supreme Court is taking up, that New York gun case that's been repealed, but the Supreme Court is taking it up anyway, that says that I think the original law was you could take your gun to a gun range or something recreational like that, but you couldn't stop anywhere, a gas station or a store, and you couldn't take that gun out of the city limits.
Yeah, initially it was if you wanted to go... if you wanted to go to the gun range, so you could only go to the gun range in the city, you could not take it out of the city limits. And then when they started with the Supreme Court, then they repealed that, and the New York legislature, which is really a surprise because New York is not one of those highly supportive of gun states, came back and said, well, no municipalities could pass a gun law like this. But on the flip side, you also could not... If you were going to a gun range or somewhere, you couldn't stop anywhere on the way there or the way back.
And speaking of gun laws and Second Amendment and United Kingdom, which doesn't have that, there was a terrorist attack, a knife attack on the London Bridge. And, you know, I don't want to make light of a terrorist attack. Anyone trying to kill someone or murder someone, same thing, I know, or hurt someone, you know, is a terrible thing. But it just showed you just how grateful that I am that we have a Second Amendment here, because there is video showing citizens trying to subdue this attacker with fire extinguishers and with a elephant tusk. And it's something from a Charlie Chaplin movie, almost, just seeing them going round and round trying to stop this guy.
So. Yeah, it's obviously it's not comical, but it's when you consider, now I've heard, here's the alternative argument to, hey, you know, people are still going to be violent even if they don't have guns, obviously. Right. That was the case in the UK. But I saw a tweet from Stephen King, of all people. I don't even follow him. I don't know why it came up in my feed. But he said, well, yes, but if it were a gun, maybe 30 people would have been killed versus 3 people.
Yeah.
Your rebuttal.
My rebuttal is that one of the first rules that they teach you in politics when you're doing interviews or whatever is you don't answer hypotheticals. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a hypothetical. We'll never know what
we don't know.
If that will happen.
Right.
The fact is that those folks over there in jolly old England don't have Second Amendment rights. We've seen plenty of instances in China and other countries where people don't have gun rights, that people are 7 or 8 people are murdered at a time with a gun or with a hammer or any type of object. You know, it's like what we always say, it's not the person or it's not the object that is killing this person, it is the gun.
Certainly harder to do with a hammer or a knife than a
gun. It is. I think the
rapid fire firearm.
What I look to when I see somebody say that is first of all, it's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, because it could have been worse. But how many cases in the United States do you hear that somebody stopped a crime who had a gun? The answer is not many, because they don't get press coverage.
Yeah.
Because when that happens, it's like, oh, good citizen. It's usually a local story. Yeah. It doesn't make national news. The ones you hear about are the big ones.
And it counters the whole argument that people who were against concealed and carry was that, okay, if you allow citizens to carry guns, then we're going to go back to the Marshall Dillon Old West days where mm-hmm. people are going to just be breaking out, having gunfights. You know, over silly things, which hasn't really happened. I mean, you have your instances where someone is, you know, I think up the Show Me's bar up in North County, where the guy had the gun legally. They got in a fight over
the
whose
difference
dog
between
was,
the Show Me Institute and Show Me's
yeah,
the bar
yeah.
is pretty wide.
Huge, isn't
dramatic.
It? Huge.
Dramatic.
And so let's get to our numbers. 314-241-9797, 866-455-9797. Before we go to break, after our break, we're going to have Horace Cooper. Horace Cooper is a co-chairman of Project 21. He has written a book, and it was on my screen here, and I can't bring it up. But we're going to talk to Horace about his new book that he has written. We also want to talk to him a little bit about these polls that are saying that Trump is getting 30% of the African-American vote. We also want to talk to him about the great economic news that that we've had. African-American unemployment is at its all-time lowest. So excited about... Oh, there it is. Thank you, Frank. The book is How Trump is Making Black America Great Again, The Untold Story of Black Achievement in the Era of Trump. And those of you that are frequent viewers of Fox News, see Mr. Cooper on the Ingram angle and on Sean Hannity. He's on there all the time. And those that have listened to the Annie Fry Show and the Weekend Report, when we have him, he is a very good guest. He's very animated. You know where he stands on the issues. Again, my name is Chris Arps, and I am privileged to substitute for Annie Fry, who is out for today, but she will be back tomorrow. Love being here with Ryan Wiggins, our old Weekend Report co-host, my wife Becky, and Frank Ladd. You're listening to the Annie Fry Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Get up off that thing!
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Hope you're getting up off that thing. This is Chris Arps, substitute hosting on 97.1 FM Talk. And as I said, Annie is out today, but she will be back tomorrow. Always great to sit in for her. And as I promised, we've got Horace Cooper, co-chairman of Project 21. He is also, a side note, is the other co-chairperson of Project 21 is St. Louis's own Stacy on the right. A lot of the 97.1 listeners know who she is. And want to talk to Horace about his book, How Trump is Making Black America Great Again, The Untold Story of Black Advancement in the Era of Trump. Horace, how are you?
Hey, it's great to be on the program. Hope great. Your Thanksgiving was great.
It was great. Always great to take a couple of days off and enjoy turkey and food and family and stuff yourself and watch the Dallas Cowboys lose another game. So it was perfect.
Yeah, all of that I was in agreement with except for that at the end.
Well, I know you're a big Washington fan. You're probably a Redskins fan, right?
No, I'm a Dallas Cowboy all the way.
So am I. I didn't know that, Norris. Okay.
Way to start the interview by insulting the guest, Chris.
exactly. You know what, Horace? First thing that I want to talk to you about, two polls came out last week showing President Trump's support among African Americans in the 30% range. You know, one poll, you can say, okay, it's an outlier. Two polls, you're kind of saying, oh, okay, maybe. A third poll has come out saying the president's support is in the 30% range. Do you believe these polls, and what do you attribute it to?
Well, there's a couple things. One is, it's no doubt that when people who are just working every day, supporting and loving their families, look around and see that their economic situation is better than it was before, they naturally want it to continue. And when they look around and hear and see what's going on. You know what they say, if your brother-in-law loses his job, there's a recession. If you lose yours, it's called a depression. Well, what happens when not only did you not lose your job, you got a raise and a bonus, and you went out and bought a new pickup truck, and your brother-in-law said he's moving out and he's getting his own apartment? When you see those kinds of things, nobody has to tell you, no one has to persuade you, no one has to sell you. You know that the circumstances economically are better. And I believe it is going to be nearly impossible to convince people who see with their own eyes what's going on not to believe it, not to rely on it. It's going to be very, very hard, and that's why we see these kinds of numbers coming. Oh, and by the way, there are a bunch of people that won't tell the truth, even now, to the pollsters about what they're thinking. So I say those numbers are actually underestimating the approval rating and the potential for support in November.
You know, when I was watching Meet the Press, not this last weekend, but the weekend before, they have a segment called Data Download. And those numbers that were in that segment were mind-boggling to me. It said that 50% of African-American Democrats label themselves moderate to conservative. That's, you know, not liberal, moderate to conservative. Horace, how can the conservative movement attract those voters who are consider themselves moderate to conservative?
Well, here's the thing. We've had 8 years when President Obama was running the show and demonstrating to the American people, and in particular Black Americans who were paying attention, that it was good to have a Black man in the White House, even if you didn't get to keep yours. It was good to have the first Black president elected, even if you had to have your car taken or you got your, or you were laid off from your job. In fact, at one of his rare town hall meetings, the president was asked by a Black woman whether or not we were returning to the period of pork and beans because her budget, her husband's budget, and their lifestyles were so stretched. And he promised that it was going to get better. Instead of getting better, under Barack Obama, we set 5 separate records for the highest unemployment for Black Americans, and we set the records for the highest number of Black Americans on food stamps and the highest number of Black Americans who lost their homes. By the time of his administration, when we, quote, had been officially in recovery for 2.5 years, we had the highest gap between Blacks and whites in terms of economic individual household ownership, individual financial well-being than we had seen since the Great Depression. Now, here's the good news. Under President Trump's policies, Black Americans, just like the rest of the country, but Black Americans are setting a record for the number of people saying, I don't need to use the food stamp program anymore. They're not being kicked off the program. They are finding great opportunities. And in fact, the number of, we've set 6 separate records for unemployment attainment by Black Americans. Why am I telling you all of this? What I'm telling you is it used to be a lot easier to say to Black America, don't vote for those mean old Republicans, don't vote for conservative policies because they don't like you. Now we've had 8 years where people got to see, oh, okay, we've got a Black man who's a Democrat and a liberal in power. For the beginning of his term, he had the entire House and the Senate on his behalf, and all of that led to misery. It is going to be a lot harder to say, don't vote for that man that tweets because he's a racist or he's a bigot. Now, the president himself is planning to visit more and more places where Black Americans are, and he plans to highlight more and more of the policies. But I will tell you, more than outreach, more than saying hello and shaking your hand, more than all of that is putting money in your pocket. Under Barack Obama, there was no money in the pocket and a lot of month left over. Now, what we're seeing is there's not much month left over and there's still some money left in the pocket. That, I think, is the best campaign idea ever. And if the Democrats or the progressives want to compete against that message, they're going to have to say, here's how I can make it even better.
Hey, Horace, this is Ryan Wiggins. We've been talking a little bit on the broad scope of things, especially with your book being How Trump is Making Black America Great Again. But I want to ask a very specific question that I really do not know the answer to, and I want to know what you think. These three polls that have come out, one of them is from Rasmussen, and it shows that black support for Trump is in the 30s. The other do, too. That one is more right-leaning usually, or at least is favorable to Republicans. The other two are not. Emerson is the other one. It's not. NPR and PBS is the third one. Clearly is not. And it's saying that black support for Trump is at about 32%. So at this point, these polls are not outliers. But something has changed in the last month because these poll numbers are new. It had been maybe in the 15% range. This is double. So something has changed in the last month. The only thing I can see that's happening is impeachment. But what do you attribute this jump in black support for Trump to in the last month?
Well, Bill Clinton's campaign explained to us that it's always about the economy. It's the economy, stupid. Here's what black Americans are saying in the NPR poll. Black Americans said in the NPR poll that they did not believe that this impeachment crusade was worthwhile, was useful, would be ultimately successful, and they largely suggested that it was going to be a waste of time. Many Americans, but particularly black Americans, were wondering why all of this energy and effort is being put into it. Now, I recently was on the Laura Ingraham Show. Actually, it was the night before Thanksgiving. And I was asked this question that, should black Americans expect that they have to choose between personal prosperity or civil rights dignity? And I laughed then, and I'll laugh now. The original March on Washington, where the civil rights effort that ultimately resulted in the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and the Fair Housing Act, was originally a jobs rally. And in fact, in my book, I show a copy of one of the banners that was being circulated that day, and it was called a jobs rally, a march on Washington. Here is the truth. The best way to obtain dignity, the best way to be an independent person who is competently able to decide your life for yourself is to be able to have the opportunities for access to economic growth. And that means if you're more prosperous, if you're able to send your kids to better schools, if you're able to get to better neighborhoods, if you're able to do the things that you know are good for you, you and your family are able to thrive. When the government says, I've got housing for you, I've got schooling for you, I've got health care for you, black Americans of all people know all of that is always substandard. Now, they don't say, right, we don't want it. What they say is, we want better. And that's what this growth opportunity is. So I will tell you, black Americans are rejecting this whole idea that what we need is to stay in the public housing, that we need to stay in these inner city poorly performing public schools, and that we need food stamps to put food on our table. Right. They want exactly the opposite.
Good deal. Horace, tell folks where they can get a hold of your book, How Trump is Making Black America Great Again, The Untold Story of Black Advancement in the Era of Trump.
Yeah, go to either the Barnes & Noble website or Amazon. It's available right now on pre-order. And, of course, you can always check us out at www.projectnews.com.
Becky's asking me, can we get a signed one?
Oh, absolutely. Happy to.
Thank you, Horace. Appreciate you coming on with us, and have a great day, my friend.
Thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm. And that's Horace Cooper, Project 21. Always love having him on. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of impeachment. We're just going to talk about some big breaking news on why Linda Page or Lisa Page, whatever her name
is. Lisa Page.
Yeah. She's
back in the news.
Yeah, why she broke her silence. Really a big deal. You're listening to the Annie Fry Show. This is Chris Arps. Our numbers are 314-241-9797 or 866-455-9797. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Chris Arps sitting in for Annie today. She will be back tomorrow. Do you know who this is?
No, for a while I thought, boy, Chris is really making the show his own with the bump music, but now this sounds like an Annie Fry song.
I like that. It makes me want to sit back on the back porch with a bourbon or something and just whittle.
Well, who is it?
I don't know, Frank.
Oh.
That's not on, that wasn't on my playlist.
Thought you were setting me up for a, well, you know who this is? And then you had a long story. Instead, you had nothing.
No, I had absolutely nothing. But let's talk about impeachment a little bit. Before we get to that, let me play this.
Yeah, please do.
We'll hear from four separate witnesses. These will be constitutional scholars, three scholars who will essentially say that the president, in terms of what was done as it relates to Ukraine, committed high crimes and misdemeanors.
So we this week, the impeachment inquiry goes from the Intelligence Committee to the Judiciary Committee, and we're going to have four witnesses, academics, that are going to be talking about why we must impeach the president. Is this the smoking gun, Ryan? Is this what's finally going to get the American people woke to impeaching the president?
I wonder if we're even going to see the news stations carrying it this time. Because at first it was like, wow, this is going to be a big deal. These are impeachment hearings. And as I understand it, the American public became less and less concerned with it throughout the two-week period, to the point that now that Adam Schiff won't even be leading these, Jerry Nadler will be leading. It's a different committee. He's a little less entertaining, I think,
to say the least,
is the way that I would put it, which is why they had Adam Schiff leading it from the get-go, because this is the committee that actually should have been leading it.
Exactly.
So I don't think we're going to see anything. Here's the smoking gun, if you want to put it that way. If you don't see the stations carrying this, then impeachment's over.
That's what I wanted to get to. That's what I want to throw this out to the audience. 314-241-9797, 866-455-9797. I want to ask the audience, do you think that the Democrats are going to pull the trigger in the House and impeach the president? For weeks, it's been a foregone conclusion. This is something that's going to happen. They've kind of crossed the Rubicon. They have to do it now. But I think with the public not really getting on board with this, and I think they are scared to death of having five of their candidates not in Iowa, New Hampshire, and all of these states for 5 to 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beginning to believe that they are not going to pull the trigger.
Really?
It's still kind of out there on the limb a little bit. But if you just look at the political nature of this, they are cutting their throats.
Yeah.
If this is what the American or people are seeing during primary and caucus season is a partisan effort to impeach the president. And then you couple with these guys aren't even campaigning. You may have some fringe person come out of Iowa
and
end up winning it.
Yeah, because, all of the candidates other than Buttigieg will have ties to this in the Senate once they bring it to the Senate. Biden, of course, is not in the Senate anymore like Warren and Sanders are, but he'll be a part of the investigation. So that's going to be worse for him if it does go forward.
Biden will be a part of it because they're talking about calling him as a witness.
Exactly.
On some of this.
So you know that the Senate and probably some members of the House who are high-ranking officials are getting pressure from these presidential candidates saying, look, you've got to end this thing. Maybe even Biden himself is saying, I do not want to go through this. Right at the beginning of the Iowa caucuses, right before going into that vote, we're going to be seeing Biden up there, both Joe and Hunter, probably, being grilled on why there was possible corruption when you were the vice president. That's not going to go well going into your first primary vote or your caucus anyway.
And I giggled a little bit when you said smoking gun, because I actually have an article here that I was going to get into.
It
says, do Democrats have enough, quote unquote, smoking gun evidence for impeachment?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's all political, like you just said.
And long time listeners of 97.1 and the Mark Cox Morning Show know that Mark has a journalism rule that says you have to go about 5 or 6 paragraphs into an article until you really get the meat of the story. And this article is actually about 5 paragraphs. Again, the title is, do Democrats have enough smoking gun evidence for impeachment? And then when you go 5 paragraphs in, this is what it says. There is at present no single piece of evidence that conclusively links Trump to the Ukraine scandal, like the taped transcript of President Nixon ordering the Watergate cover-up. That particular piece of evidence was such a decisive, quote-unquote, smoking gun that it released forced Nixon's resignation within a matter of days. And I've said that for weeks here. They don't have anything like Nixon, a Watergate burglary or missing tape where it's been erased. You've got the president not even admitting that this is Mulvaney did, but the thing that doesn't work in the Democrats' favor in all of this is Trump has plausible deniability with a lot of this stuff. It may look like, oh, this is complete BS, he's covering up, but he has plausible deniability. There is a law in our treaty with Ukraine that before we give them money, we have to certify that they are not corrupt. There's so many things that he can say, hey, I'm just following the law. The also bad thing about this is it brings up the whole Ukrainian connection, and the Democrats and the media keep saying, oh, this is a hoax, this is a hoax. But just like Senator Kennedy said yesterday, and said the Washington Examiner, The Economist, all of these different publications that are showing that the DNC and the Hillary Clinton campaign were conspiring with Ukrainian officials to dig up dirt on Trump. It makes me so angry because the media is like, well, who are you going to believe, us or your lying eyes, when there's this stuff that's out there proving it?
Yeah, and the news from the weekend, if you hadn't been paying attention, like most of America probably took a weekend off anyway with Thanksgiving. But
I didn't.
You never do. President Zelensky from Ukraine, of course, did an interview with Time magazine and again has come out and said, quote, I never talk to the president from the position of a quid pro quo.
Now, Ryan,
do you need?
Well, the Democrats say, well, hey, this guy controls Trump, controls your aide. He's got millions of dollars. So, of course, you're going to say what he wants you to say.
But if you had that big of a disagreement with this guy, if you hated Trump that much and were like, man, the other guys just gave us money for nothing, wouldn't you want to get him out of office? I mean, that would be more of an impetus to get rid of him.
I don't know, and I understand that, and I don't believe any of the conspiracy theories of all of that, but I do kind of, I mean, he is the president of the United States, and he's pretty powerful, and even if he may be leaving office in a year and a half, there's a lot that he can do to you in the interim, especially when you're trying to fight against the Russians, but I don't believe any of that. Becky, go ahead.
Well, I was going down to the Economist poll. And kind of breaking down the question on impeachment. And to me, the most fascinating part is this is last week. So most of the interesting stuff's already come out. And of independents, 25% aren't sure if they should impeach.
Yeah, and that's huge.
That's absolutely huge. And what's interesting is that the Republicans, yes, 10% of Republicans believe they should impeach, 81% believe they shouldn't. And of the Democrats, 85% believe they should impeach, 8% said they shouldn't, and 11% aren't sure. 11% of Democrats aren't sure if they should impeach.
Yeah, you would, if you listen to the mainstream media and they're rabid activists, you think that it's kind of 99% in favor.
Well, it's everybody's dug in. You are seeing some movement in those polls, but most people are dug into their side.
Yep.
Whether you see something convincing, it's the Rorschach test. Everybody keeps saying, whatever you want to see is what you're going to see.
Yep.
But you have seen some movement move away, like you said, Becky, with independents. There's just been a slight shift overall, maybe 2-3 points, still within the margin of error, but still moving away from being at least convinced that impeachment should even be on the table. But most of them are moving away from even wanting this inquiry to continue.
Do you remember Lisa Page and Peter Strzok? Do you remember those?
Of course.
Figures?
Of course.
Well, you know, I think Peter Strzok had to testify in some hearings over the summer. But Lisa Page has kind of been in the background. But she has come out over the weekend and says she has to break her silence. She is completely offended. She's just boiling mad. And the reason for that is her quote-unquote Trump's fake orgasm forced her to speak out.
At a rally.
You want to talk about that?
Do you remember?
Should I just leave that hanging?
No, that was really funny.
That's the headline.
He did that at a rally. He said, "Oh, the FBI wasn't against me except for Lisa Page and Peter. Because they were having an affair, right. And we all know that they were texting each other about how much they hated Trump. Well, these guys are in the FBI and they're high up in the FBI. Yeah. So there's a very serious case there. If they were against him from the get go, and there were texts that were saying, look, we're not going to have this and we're going to stop this and things that you're like, you can't say that in the FBI. You're supposed to be impartial. But the weird thing about her coming out right now is, as you know, the IG report is coming out next week. Well, she is expected to be involved in that IG report, not in terms of creating it, but her name would be listed in it. So she's coming out ahead of that IG report. Why? We don't really know yet. We'll see when the report is released next week.
And I'm really beginning to wonder just how bad it's going to be. Democrats the last week or so have been saying the leaked reports have come out saying that this is not going to be as bad as what Republicans are saying it is. It's going to say there's been some malfeasance, but this isn't going to be the smoking gun that Republicans... We're using that word a lot today, aren't we?
Well, you are.
Smoking gun. It's not the smoking gun that's going to prove the Ukrainian conspiracy theory that the president and his followers have been advocating.
Well, this is not intended to be a smoking gun. This is just an internal report on the DOJ. So this is just a report, and there might be some things in it that people don't like. Of course, we probably won't, as the general public, see the whole thing. There's going to be parts of it that are redacted, but they're trying to leave it as intact as they can, as I understand things. The smoking gun, if you want to use that term, will be that why has this become a criminal investigation with Durham? Because this report is what's led to a criminal investigation. Yep. So this report will be interesting, but this is sort of the beginning of the question marks. Yeah. This isn't the end of them.
And what I don't understand, you know, the people are trying to downplay it. Oh, well, you know, there was a warrant application that something was changed. It shouldn't have been, but it really doesn't take away from the overall FISA warrant investigation. But it's just any part of it, if it's tainted, to me, kind of throws a bad light on all of it. Well, everything else is okay. It doesn't really matter all that much that somebody lied or changed something on a FISA warrant to survey the president and his campaign.
You mean the whole fruit of the poisonous tree type thing?
Exactly. You got religious there.
No, actually, that's not religious.
Well, the fear was that this thing would come out, this IG report, because, excuse me. Oh, we're being played out. So the fear was it would come out and nothing would happen. So we'd see, oh boy, there's a lot of problems here, but then it would just go away.
Yep.
Well, we know that's not going to happen now because it's become a criminal investigation.
And that is Ryan Wiggins. We'll be back after the hour with our guest, Susie Moore from RedState.com. You're listening to The Annie Fry Show. Chris Arps sitting in on 97.1 FM Talk.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.